Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Thanks for listening to the Prime Time with Isaac and Suk podcast, brought to you on the fan by your local Les Schwab Tire Center, doing the right thing since 1952.
Prime Time on Football Friday, 1080 The Fan.
Professional football in America is a special game, a unique game. Played nowhere else on earth, it is a rare game. The men who play it make it so.
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Suk.
Driven by Gresham Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. A short drive from anywhere. Visit dodgeofgresham.com.
That's going to make the fucking difference between winning and losing.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, coming up at 4:15, Oregon basketball recruiting. It's on fire. And we will talk about it here on our sports show.
That's what we do. We talk about sports.
Yeah. It can happen.
Sometimes.
Been known to happen, folks. Right now, though, our college football challenge. Here are the records. These are against the spread. Three picks from each of us every week. Right now, Lynch, 13-16-1. I am 14-16. And Big Zook, 16-14. So that means Lynch is first up.
My first pick is going to be West Virginia. They are a 3-point favorite over Texas. West Virginia's offense is awesome, but Texas' defense is awesome, hence the close spread. But West Virginia is 4-1 at home, and that's where they're playing this game. And I think it should be fairly close because Texas is held tight with a lot of good teams because of their defense. But maybe a 10-point win for the Mountaineers, so I'm going to take West Virginia -3.
Okay. My first play, Jason Sakanik of yes. Vancouver, Washington, Oregon. I mean, Washington, United States.
There you go.
Of Earthworld.
Cascade Park, if you will.
Milky Way Universe.
Milky Way Universe.
Hard Kevin.
I'm going to go with USC.
Ooh. Is that like 17, 16, something like that?
I'm seeing it here at 16. USC is playing UCLA. And the way I feel about this game is that Ronald Jones will not be stopped. USC will score as much as they want in this game because UCLA's defense is soft as butter. And then you look at the other side and you see Josh Rosen, who can obviously do a few things against USC's secondary. Luke Falk was able to. But Sam Darnold, I think, is going to be fired up for this as everyone's starting to put him, Rosen, over him. So, no, this game does not mean much for USC in the standings. But I think it will mean a lot for Darnold matching up against Rosen. And then, remember, the Trojans, they laid a giant egg at Notre Dame. They failed to get up for their last rivalry game.
Yep.
I think they're going to be up for this game, knowing how big of an egg they laid in South Bend. And I think that USC rolls here. The final score of this football game will be 107-29.
Yowzers. Did you know, by the way, that UCLA is officially giving up, on the ground, 302 yards per game?
Yes, I did know that.
That is
That's
insane.
Why I picked USC.
It's stunning.
How many Jones or how many yards do you think Jones will have?
I'll bet you he gets 375.
He'll have more than 200.
I mean, UCLA's run defense is so bad. I'm going to stick in the Pac-12 as well, but I'm going to head down to the burrito, going down to the big burrito.
Uh-oh.
Where Arizona State is only having to lay 7 here, and this is Arizona State's bowl game, by the way. They're 5-5. They don't want to have to go bowl eligibility against Arizona. So I think Arizona State's going to be up for this one. And Arizona State can score. They're a little bit uneven. They're up and down, but they can score. And to be quite honest with you, I think some of the Corey Hall enthusiasm has worn off after those first 2 weeks. Cal stuck it to you pretty good, and then Arizona blew you out. And I know that Arizona is a better offensive team than the Sun Devils, but Manny Wilkins can move around a little bit. I just don't see Oregon State keeping this within a touchdown. Give me the Sun Devils. I'll lay the 7.
My second game is going to be in the SEC. Tennessee is a 15.5-point underdog against LSU. Did you know that Tennessee lost by over 40 to Missouri, who we've made fun of over and over again on this program.
Missouri's getting it together, man.
And they fired Butch Jones because of it. I know a new coach sometimes means new life, but not against LSU. I think they blow them out, so I'll take the Tigers minus 15 and a half.
You know that Missouri, because we piled on them early, right?
Yeah.
Remember that?
They were awful.
We got a lot of wins on them. They were awful. Do you know that they've covered six in a row?
Have they really?
Yeah.
Go Missouri.
And they've won four in a row.
Wow.
They got it together, man.
That's un-Kansas-like of them.
Okay, what did you just say?
LSU minus 15 and a half over Tennessee.
Okay.
I'm on LSU.
All right. Play number two for me will be Virginia. And Virginia is getting 19 points at Miami of Florida. Now, Miami of Florida, of course, we all know, is undefeated. However, they're coming off two huge wins, and this may be ripe for a letdown. Virginia is already bowl eligible, and so they're playing with house money. And in the end, I just don't think Miami's offense is so potent that they cover this number here. Virginia is tough. This is going to be one of those move the chains type of games, and I think Miami may be let down here in this spot. I think it's a tough spot for them to come home and take on Virginia. They could be overlooking them. So I think there is value in taking 19 for the Virginia Cavaliers and your boy, Bronco Mendenhall.
I'm going to look here. Alabama versus Mercer. Oh, wait, no. They don't even have a point spread on this.
Hey, I have an idea.
What?
Before you, they don't have a
No, point there's no spread on it.
Did you see the Oklahoma-Kansas spread?
Yeah, and I may be going there right now.
Oh, you're
now.
Going there?
Yeah.
Okay, hold on. I was telling Mike this earlier because I asked Mike, are there any good Friday night college football games tonight? Mm-hmm. And he was like, no, there's Sun Belt games. You know, if the SEC is going to play these crappy games late in the season, why don't they put them on Thursday and Friday nights? So at least,
yeah, there may be nothing on. But
hey,
you
want to get a look at Alabama tonight? Yeah, they're only playing Mercer, but there's nothing else on. Might as well watch it.
Yeah, Bama and Mercer and Clemson versus the Citadel. Neither one of them has a point spread.
And I think Auburn's playing
Louisiana Monroe.
Oh, yeah.
But at least that has a spread, by
What's
the way.
The spread?
That 36. But that's how bad the Alabama Mercer and Clemson Citadel games are. There's no point spread on, but you know where there is a spread of 37?
Yeah.
Oklahoma and Kansas. You know who's going to go ahead and lay the 37 points? This guy. This just screams like 52-10. Go ahead and give me the Sooners.
Hey, did you see Kansas has like covered three straight, haven't they?
No, they've
played close.
They've covered two of the last three, and I think you're barking up the wrong tree here, pal.
We'll see what happens.
This is going to be a shock the world game.
Have you seen Kansas play defense?
It's going to be 55-24, and you're just going to miss.
Have you seen Kansas play defense, and have you seen Oklahoma play offense?
I have seen both. Unfortunately, I have seen Kansas play defense. It is not good. But
Oklahoma's going to score 60. Style points here matters.
You're getting a little bristly about it here. You're not feeling very good about this pick. Hey, Rock Chalk, all right?
See what happens.
This is a big game.
I'm
calling for the outright win.
Just out of spite. So let's roll the dice.
Spite?
Here.
Why do you hate my Jayhawks? I thought you were on. You're so wishy-washy. I thought you were on board.
I love the freight train that is Kansas football.
God,
it's just fun to bet.
I can't figure you
out. It's fun to bet for and against Kansas. I just enjoy watching them.
37? Really?
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and lay it.
All right. Okay, this is a controversial pick, but guess who I'm on with my third.
Whoa. Can I get my third pick?
Oh, sorry.
Just in case. Don't
Ladies
want you to
gentlemen,
steal it.
Mike Lynch.
I'm going to go another big spread in the SEC for another team that I think is really bad. Mississippi State, 13-point favorite over Arkansas. Arkansas has dead man walking Brett Bielema. They just fired their AD. They're not very good. Mississippi State should have probably beaten Alabama last week, but they fell apart at the very end. I'll take them to win by three scores over Arkansas, so I'll have Mississippi State minus 13.
Okay, finally, I will be on Oregon. The spread is up to three, but I'm going to lay it. Because I think that it's quite revealing that Vegas had the Arizona-Oregon game as a pick'em with Burmeister being Oregon's quarterback. That to me says that Vegas doesn't trust Arizona on the road. So I went in and dug a little bit about how Arizona's played on the road. And it has not been great, man. They barely snuck by both Colorado and Cal. On the road, and their other road game, they got beat by USC, although they played them tough. I think Arizona's good. However, you've got a couple things working in the Ducks' favor here. One, they're back at home. Two, Justin Herbert is back, and their offense will be much better. And I don't think Arizona's defense is great. Three, I think that Jim Leavitt you know, the one thing about Oregon's defense, they do have a pretty good defensive front. You know, they're second in the Pac-12 in tackles for loss, and they're second in the Pac-12 in sacks. And I think with Jim Leavitt, they have a puncher's chance to slow down Khalil Tate. I think Oregon is the play here, and they are favored by 3. I'll lay it.
I'm going to go a little ACC action here. North Carolina State on the road is actually a dog to Wake Forest, and Wake Forest is improved. But I've seen North Carolina State play a couple times. I really like their defense. You know, they battled Clemson tough. The one game, they did get kind of shillelied there by Notre Dame, but I like NC State here.
Who are they playing, you said?
Wake Forest, and they're actually a dog. I'm getting 1.5, so I'll go ahead and take the 1.5. North Carolina State goes on the road. They're 7-3. This goes to 8-3. The Wolfpack win this.
All right, Mike, I have accidentally erased your picks. You had West Virginia.
Yes.
-3.
Yes.
LSU -15.
15.5.
And the Mosley.
Mississippi State -13.
Okay. So Mike's on West Virginia, LSU, Mississippi State. Suk will be on Arizona State, Oklahoma, and NC State. And I will be on USC, Virginia, and Oregon. Hey, you want a little bonus gambling nugget?
Yeah, what do you got?
Well, I was looking at the Georgia Tech Duke game. I don't know why.
All right.
And I've found out through VegasInsider.com that Georgia Tech has only not covered one time all year.
Ooh.
They didn't cover when they went on the road to Virginia. They lost that game. Other than that, they've covered everyone. They did push against Clemson because they lost by 14. They are on the road at Duke. Duke has not covered since week 3.
That is a nice little gambling nugget.
Miami, Virginia, Florida State, Pitt, Virginia Tech, and Army. Duke has not covered any of those games, and they have lost 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 in a row overall, Duke. Well, you know what spread is on the game?
What?
Guess.
Georgia Tech by, I don't know, 6?
Georgia Tech -6.5. You idiot.
So dumb. I may have to flip my Kansas pick and take me some Georgia Tech action.
No, you can't do that.
No, I'm sticking with my...
The segment's over.
Sticking with my Sooners.
I was just pointing out that Duke has not covered in a long time, and they're losing games right and left.
Tech's
and Georgia Tech
machine.
Is a covering machine. Something to keep an eye on. Okay, coming up next, let's talk about Oregon basketball recruiting. We can carve out a segment for that, right? I mean, they are hot. 413 on The Fan.
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Suk.
Driven by Gresham Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, coming up in our next segment, we will talk about the latest that has been revealed between Roger Goodell and old Jarrah.
It's getting good.
But we thought we should stop down here for a minute and talk about the Oregon recruiting class in basketball.
Yep. A consensus top 10 class right now after the early signing period.
Well, I'll tell you, man. So they got Troy Brown, the 5-star kid. They got Kenny Wooten, the 4-star kid. Okay, so wait. I'm sorry. I'm looking at the wrong year.
Yeah.
Those guys are.
Louis King is the 5-star.
Yeah. Hold on. Yeah, Louis King, the 5-star. Miles Norris, that's the other guy. He was a 4-star. And there is a chance that they're going to get Bol, Manute Bol's kid, out of Finley Prep.
Well, and that Will Richardson is another 4-star that they were able to get in the early signing period. And then, yeah, Bol is the number 3 overall player in the class. And remember, they were in the final 3 for the number 1 player. I forget what his name was, but he ended up going to
UNLV, I thought.
No, Duke.
Did he go to Duke?
Yeah.
Then there was one other kid that went to UNLV.
Yeah, there was a kid that they were on.
They were in on a lot of dudes.
Yep.
Man.
But the number 1 player, man, was just a week ago. He had the 3 hats. It was Oregon, Duke, and I think Kentucky. He ended up going to Duke. But Bol, who is the number 3 overall player, son of Manute Bol, some people think that he ends up at Oregon. And if he does, then
they have the number 1 class.
Yeah, Nemec says that it'll be a consensus top 3, and a lot of people will think this will be the number 1 class in the country.
Well, that's pretty badass.
Yeah.
And look, I think you've got to give Oregon a lot of credit for finding Dana Altman, because when Dana Altman was hired, I mean, nobody cared. Like, it was like, what? That's who they hired? Because remember all the talk about Izzo and
they were swinging big, and they ended up with a guy from Creighton.
But you know, Oregon many thought that if Dana Altman, because he, okay, so Dana Altman coached at Kansas State when I was back at Kansas. And so I had a lot of respect for him. He's really tough. But many thought in college basketball circles that if Altman ever got a crack at a bigger school, that he would become an elite coach. And if you say, you know, okay, so you got Coach K, you've got Izzo, you've got Self, Roy Williams, Pitino was.
Boeheim.
Boeheim is certainly
Calipari.
In there. Calipari. Those are your elite guys.
Yeah.
The next level down, I got to tell you, I think it's headed by Dana Altman. He's that good. And so, I mean, because this guy was, well, first of all, he's kind of milquetoast, right? He's not.
We call him the brush, for heaven's sakes. He's doing the big comb over.
He's not that dynamic. And he was kind of hidden in the Midwest because he's a Nebraska guy. He was at Creighton. But, and so because of that, I don't think a lot of people, you know, they're like, whatever. They were just a really tough tournament team, right, at Creighton. And then before that at Kansas State. And yet inside college basketball, I mean, you could tell Oregon did their homework. They're like, man, people love this guy. Like other coaches hate coaching against Dana Altman. And he just got to a Final Four. And now he could have Oregon's the best recruiting class in history and the number one recruiting class in the country. I mean, I think this dude is starting to, and now he's got to do something with it here. There's more to come, but I think he's starting to enter the elite conversation.
I think you have to put together, like you said, I think you have to put together a couple more deep runs. But, and I'm not even saying Final Fours, but you, on a year-in, year-out basis, if you're advancing to the Sweet 16 and you're making runs into the Elite Eight, into the Final Four, and you do that, let's go. You do that maybe 3 out of 5 years. I think that's where you really enter the conversation. But last year's Final Four, I certainly was leaps and bounds to this program. In fact, that's what they said on the Oregon Live article. I think it was from Rivals. We're talking about how Oregon has really capitalized on that Final Four run because the exposure that he's always done a nice job of getting, you know, players to Eugene, but he was able to take that Final Four run and parlay it into this because it's supposed to be a down year for Oregon if they were finished third or fourth in the Pac-12. So I don't think huge things are expected out of him this year.
Mother young.
But you bring in a class like this.
They have a lot of freshmen this year on the team.
But this is like this freshman.
So does everybody though.
This that's kind of my point. This sort of freshman class here, this is Kansas Duke, you know, sort of territory where even with freshmen, you make runs into the Sweet 16. Now the question is, can you regularly do this? Can you constantly put together top 10 recruiting classes? Because if you can, and we know Dana Altman is a good coach, then maybe this becomes the norm at Oregon. You know, maybe Oregon becomes a basketball school. We expect them to be Sweet 16 or above.
I think that there's a chance that that happens because you give a coach like him, it's all about coach, just like college football. You hire the right guy, you can win a lot of games. You give him the facilities that Oregon has, and then he's closer out here to all the talent on the West Coast. He is reeling him in, dude, and he's not like... He's not like Ernie Kent, where Ernie Kent got players, but he couldn't do anything with them for the most part. I mean, that's two Elite Eights. This guy is a tactician. He, X's and O's wise, he's as good as it gets in college basketball. So, look, we shouldn't overstate their expectations because as a college basketball fan, I'm sure Mike would agree with this as a Syracuse fan, when you get these loaded classes that come in, they'll almost always disappoint you because they're just so young.
Yeah.
We heap too many expectations on these young five-star kids. It just takes time. Hell, Andrew Wiggins, well, Wiggins was pretty good at Kansas, but I can go through, you know, just a slew of guys who are just hyped up beyond belief that sucked at Kansas. Look no further than...
and still left after 1 year, probably.
Yeah, and they still leave, right? It can be at times fool's gold, but this is the way Kentucky's doing it, and this is the way a lot of the schools are doing it now. And I just think that he is good enough to keep it where it is. I mean, that's the question is, I think a lot of times you wait for the other shoe to drop, right? Well, Oregon was really good in football, but, you know, it's going to come back down, right? And it sort of did. In basketball, though, man, I don't know. I think he is that. I think that much of Dana Altman that I think he can keep it going as long as they keep him.
Well,
he's won 189 games at Oregon. He wins 73% of his games at Oregon. He won 327 games at Creighton, And he went 68-54 at Kansas State. That was his first job. Well, actually, Marshall was his first job.
Well, if you go back and look, what, the last 5 years, right? Sweet 16, 32, round, so three straight round of 32s, and then they broke through with, what, the Elite Eight and then the Final Four. So
64-13 the last 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, he's...
It's up. I'm telling you, he's as good as some of those big boys.
You're starting to put together, again, over a five-year stretch here. You know, you've got three really good runs into the NCAA tournament and back-to-back in Elite Eight, Final Four. You know, with this being a down year, I think kind of to me the test of these sorts of programs is when you are supposed to be young, you have a down year, what do you do? You know, do you get bounced in the first round, or even with a team that you may know doesn't have the capability of cutting down the nets, do you still take them into a Sweet 16? Can you still win a couple tourney games? Maybe outplay the expectations. And then next year with the loaded freshman class, you know, people are going to be expecting a deep run.
Well, and you have those. It is a different. It's a different animal
when you're doing one and done. Absolutely,
yeah, very different animal because you know those guys, Brooks and those guys, and they're all excellent players.
They developed.
They stayed. And that this is going to be a whole different ballgame. But
you get into these Louis Kings, and if you get the Bull Bowls of the world, these guys that are five stars, as you pointed out, even the guys at Kentucky that don't play, that are bench players, go. Zach Collins didn't start at Gonzaga, and he left. And so that's and not only does that put pressure on you to win immediately, but it puts pressure on you to recruit like this year in and year out because the guys don't stay.
It's true, but if you watch Kansas and Kentucky the other night, I don't know how much you watch of that, John Calipari and Bill Self are pulling their hair out.
Yeah.
Dealing with these young guys, and Dana Altman's going to have the same thing. It's just, it takes time, but you're right. It's like you get into the tournament. I just think he's such a good X's and O's guy. I really think that he's on par with those other guys. As long as, put it this way, if talent is equal, there aren't many guys as good as Dana Altman. He's just got to be able to get the talent, and he was never able to do that, obviously, as you know, a school like Kansas State or at Creighton, although he got, didn't he get, who was the big stud at Creighton?
Dougie Buckets, right?
He got some good players at those two schools, too.
Yeah.
But now Oregon.
Doug McDermott, I think, was the guy that I remember was the big player at Creighton.
I think that's right. But he now at Oregon with better facilities, closer to the recruits out west, I just think, man, watch out. This is not, I don't think it's fool's gold.
Well, and especially for the one and done kid. Can't you see Eugene being kind of an attractive place for 6 months? You know, you get to play in the best facilities on the West Coast, hands down. You get to play in a sparkling arena. I mean, have you ever been to the Matthew Knight Arena down there? It's unbelievable.
Right.
You know, you go down there, and I'm not trying to, like, throw shade at anyone, but, you know, you smoke a little weed. It's Eugene. You know, ladies down there, it's you're there for 6 months, right? Oh, yeah, it's in the middle of nowhere, but you know you're not going to be there for a long time with the one-and-dones. I can totally see the kind of the sex sizzle selling at Oregon, even to a kid from across the country. That Louis King, he was an East Coast kid, right? Wasn't he like a New Jersey guy or something? He came from far away. He was another coaster, and you got him to come out here. Because, again, you're not selling kids to come out to Eugene for 4 years. You're going to be here for 6 to 8 months.
Yeah, somebody texted and said he's won 20 games, 18 of 19 seasons.
Yeah.
That's incredible. That's how you get it done, Jason.
And yet he was viewed as a meh. Higher.
Well, I just think he's not very dynamic. You know, he's not.
He's the brush.
He's just more. He's not the greatest front guy, but who cares?
He can recruit. He's obviously doing something in the recruit's living room.
Now, do we think Phil's opening the checkbook here? Yeah, do we?
I think that's easy to go down that road.
I know, but
that King kid was a New Jersey. He's Burlington, New Jersey. They got him to come over. Look, anytime a school jumps up and has this sort of this success recruiting, everyone's going to speculate. Who the hell knows whether or not someone's involved in this? Or it could just be, again, I think Oregon's got a lot to sell, especially if you're selling a kid that he's only going to have to be there for a short time.
Yeah, I like this text. Bridgeport Beers text line 55305 about Altman. Ducks have won tournament games 4 years in a row. The guy has been quietly elite for a long time. Now he's getting recruits. Yeah. And so now you get to see what he can do with better players. And that's got to be pretty exciting.
Yeah.
And they're saying, too, that if he wins tonight, it's number 600 for Dana Altman.
For his career.
600 wins. He's 58? He's 58.
I don't know. But now you add a Final Four to that resume?
Nope, he's 59.
you put together one or two or more of those, and you know, you start to get that reputation. But you know, in order to be there with those that class of guys you're talking about, you got to cut one down. You just do. You know, Calipari, for all his success, Calipari really didn't kind of join the big boys club until he cut one down with Kentucky.
Yeah, I'm trying to think other coaches who aren't in that elite group that have won. Wright.
That haven't won or see, have.
Jay Wright that have not. Oh. Like, because you go through the list of college basketball champions. It's the same.
It's the same guys. Well, Ben Howland never won one, but boy, he got to what, 3 in a row? So he certainly had that going.
Jay Wright did. And then the guy at, is it Kevin Ollie? He won at UConn.
Yeah, UConn. And that was like his first year there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right after Calhoun left. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. What is next? Jerry Jones versus Roger Goodell.
Civil War.
The latest. Here's Mike. All right, ESPN's got those guys, Don Van Natta and Seth Wickersham, all up on the NFL now.
Wonder Twin powers activate. These guys break everything.
Yeah, they're doing a deep dive here into the Jerry Jones, Roger Goodell thing.
Now, they're the ones that originally had the Bob McNair comment about the inmates running the asylum.
I want to say, too, that they might have been Barry Bonds steroid stuff. Because they're Bay Area guys, I thought. But maybe I'm wrong.
I don't think so. I thought I remember.
Often M.
I thought I remember a different name on that. I thought that was. That's going to drive me nuts. I'll look that up. But I don't think that's the same guys.
All right. So we have Jerry's quote when Roger Goodell was on the phone with Jerry to tell him that Zeke Elliott had been suspended.
So I guess the backstory of this is Jerry all along was told by Roger Goodell and the powers that be that no suspension was coming. Jerry, I guess, was 100% confident that nothing was going to come of this and was saying as much, even going around during the summer, if you remember, saying, nope, fine, nothing's going to come of this. Investigation is bear this out. Heard that the elite investigator had said no suspension. So Jerry was convinced that he was in the clear.
He said, quote, I'm going to come at you with everything I have. If you think Bob Kraft came after you hard, Bob Kraft is a P word.
Yep.
Compared to what I'm going to do. So now nobody knows what the hell Jerry's going to do. Although, you know, we've been following the story. You've been listening to us. He's certainly not backing down, and he's threatening litigation, and then the owners are threatening to sue him back, and it's just a mess. The interesting thing about this story is nobody knows how this will end. You tell me how you tell me if you can predict how the hell this ends.
Well, and it sounds like too now. Did you read through this the full article and see the Outside the Lines piece?
I'm still reading it. It's long.
It gives you a little backstory about what is brewing here. And yes, the Ezekiel Elliott thing is the catalyst behind this. But it's not just about Ezekiel Elliott, and it's not just about Jerry Jones. He is not standing alone on this. There are some other owners that are siding with Jerry Jones, and there's some others that are interested in at least hearing what Jerry has to say. So I guess kind of at the core of this, if you want to go beyond the Ezekiel Elliott thing, it sounds like a lot of the owners, including Jerry Jones, are kind of pissed about two things. That one, that Roger Goodell has gotten so much power that it's no longer the owners that are running things. You know, it used to be that the notion was that Roger Goodell was just a puppet for the owners, right? Well, not so much anymore. That Roger is getting a little big for his britches and he's taking on some owners. And there's some, Bob McNair is one, Daniel Snyder is another one, and Jerry Jones, amongst others, supposedly, that are a little unhappy that think that Goodell has too much power. The other one is that they believe that the front office has become a bloated carcass. Remember, every time there's been a problem in the NFL, what's Roger Goodell's solution is to throw a couple $1 million at it. Remember, they hired those two female investigators. They hired an ex-White House press secretary to try to rehab Goodell's image. And kind of their point is that this thing has just become this big bloated carcass of the front office, and it's not doing anything. The PR is as bad as ever. That yes, that Roger Goodell has made them money, but they're paying him $40 million a year. They're paying his staff millions upon millions of dollars, and they're not getting anything for it. And so there's some of that as well. And so this isn't just about Ezekiel Elliott. I think there are some owners now, Jerry Jones kind of being at the helm of this, that are asking the question, did Roger Goodell make them a bunch of money, or did Roger Goodell just sit at the head of the table while they made a bunch of money and they want to know why the hell they're paying him this much and why they're paying this giant staff when Jerry Jones says, hey, we built this. We owners used to be the ones that kind of ran this thing. Why do we need this guy?
Yeah, and they also talk about how they've already contacted Adam Silver.
Yeah.
They called him.
I guess they asked Silver, and he was like, no.
Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner.
Yeah.
He was like, no. I don't know why he would say no. Wouldn't he make, like, what does Silver make?
I don't know what he makes, but Roger Goodell makes $40 million a year.
Dude, NFL commish.
There were some other little tidbits in there, I guess, that some owners, there was one in there where I guess Roger Goodell and some of his cronies were standing up saying that the NFL needed to be careful because the NBA was the most likely to take them over and they needed to be careful. And there was a scene in there where they said that all the owners, Jerry Jones, some of the owners were rolling their eyes at him being like, whatever. Almost getting the sense that Goodell and his staff were saying, this is why you need us. Like, without us, the NBA is going to take you over. And the owners kind of laughed at him and were like, yeah, not so much. And they're just not happy with the fact that Goodell seemingly has botched. And his staff, like, he hired these people for the Ray Rice thing, the Greg Hardy thing. They've hired all these people, and yet the PR image is as bad as ever. And so
he's got a point.
From that standpoint,
he's got a point.
You know, there's an interesting one there saying, hey, we're paying you $40 million a year. What are you doing for us? And that's what Jerry is saying is, let's slow this down and take a long, hard look at why we're paying him and his staff what we're doing.
But I thought that Jerry and Roger were tight.
Well, they used to be.
But then the Zeke. He's got points.
Zeke is the thing that fractured it. But it's now grown beyond that. I think Jerry was willing to overlook some of the other things. But when you peed in his face and he felt like he said it was a betrayal, that he was told one thing and now it's gone the other way. And that goes back to the crux of power. That there is a sense that Roger Goodell used to do the owner's bidding, and now Roger Goodell has become too big for his britches.
Okay, well, predict how it ends. How on earth does this end?
I think Roger Goodell ends up gone.
Really?
I do.
You think Jerry gets him out of there?
I think Jerry has enough points here, and I think he can rally enough support. I think Roger Goodell ends up, I think he ends up out.
Sooner rather than later?
I don't know about sooner rather than later, but, you know, he's got, 18 more months on this? And I wonder at some point if Goodell just says enough is enough, right? I've made more money than I can ever possibly spend, although
he's got to get his lifetime health insurance.
I don't know how many people are willing to walk away from $40 million. Look, I just know this, that it sounds like Jerry Jones isn't alone. And I have learned one thing about the NFL over the last 20 years, and that's I'm not going to bet against Jerry Jones. He's the reason why the Rams are in L.A. He's the reason why the Raiders are where they're at going to Oakland.
It's true.
I'm not going to bet against them. And, you know, owners are business guys. And when I read through that article and you kind of look at some of the points, there's some valid arguments there. And they point out that the Nike CEO, which makes 10 times the revenue the NFL does, the Nike CEO makes $14 million a year. Roger Goodell is asking for 50 and has made over the last 10 years an average of 40 amongst all the perks. I think he's got a legitimate point.
I guess the question is, if somebody else were in there, what would the league look like?
Yeah.
And I think it's unanswerable.
I think
they making more than $13.5 billion a year?
And I think ultimately that may end up being his downfall is I don't know what Roger Goodell says that he's done to, I don't know, lead this. Like I think they've made the money despite Roger Goodell. Like, you're paying a guy $40 million to be the head of your organization, to keep it running smoothly, to handle the PR, to be kind of the face of it, and to make you money. Yes, they're still making money, but they've always made money. And ratings are down. PR couldn't be any worse. It seems like every year there's been a new scandal that has popped up. The LA thing ended up being a disaster, and although I guess you could blame Jerry Jones for that, he's the one that kind of helped push that through, but I'm sitting here and I'm asking the question of what does Roger Goodell have to stand on where he's going to say, I want $40 million.
Silver makes 20.
Okay. Does that tell you something though, that Adam Silver turned down potentially twice, maybe more than that to stay in the NBA as opposed to go to the NFL?
No, why do you think he did that?
Maybe
is the NFL that much worse dealing with these guys?
And that's kind of my question. the fact that he didn't even entertain it, that he just dismissed it.
He immediately said no, they said. All right. Text the Bridgeport Bears text line 55305. A college football weekend preview. Bizarre. You know, like a bizarre.
Oh yeah. Like a holiday bizarre.
Yeah, like a holiday. Yeah. We're gonna do that with college football this weekend coming up.
One more thing too, and someone kind of points this out. You wonder if Jerry Jones can point to the fact that with like Ben Roethlisberger, who feel like he didn't do anything, kind of got stabbed, and then the Robert Kraft thing, who got burned with the Tom Brady thing with not a lot of evidence, and now Jerry Jones. You wonder if they can paint the picture of he did it to us.
He'll do it to you.
He'll do it to you too.
All right, it's 4:45 on the Fan.
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Suk.
Driven by Gresham Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, here's the plan. Hot 5 at 5 in 10 minutes. And then...
Look, knowing us, that's more like 14.
College football weekend bizarre. What did you think? What are you drinking?
I don't know. This XY Science energy drink. It's terrible.
You like energy drinks?
No, but I'm really dragging butt right now. Like, I found myself, like, during commercial breaks, like, kind of doing, like, that head nod thing.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. Not a lot of sleep.
You need to get more sleep, bro.
I know. It's pretty bad.
Smoke weed.
Yeah. Well, I've tried some of the edible stuff before, but it's hit and miss. And if you have really bad insomnia, it's not something you do every night.
Huh. So when you're up at, like, 3 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel tired?
No. Wide awake.
Wide awake?
Wide awake. Last night was maybe like 4:35.
But then you get tired during the day.
Yeah. Yeah, it sucks.
And you can't sleep.
Yeah,
because it's during the day.
Game of Thrones happened. I'm almost done with it.
So wait, why can't you sleep like from 1 to 3? Or I mean, well, 2:45.
2:45? That'd be a little difficult. Yeah, it's like you try to take naps, but like...
Being serious. Like, why can't you nap?
Well, you're up and doing stuff. I've got 3 kids in the house and... All that sort of thing.
Eh, you got time to nap.
You try to squeeze one in.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
but
anyway.
I don't sleep as much as I should. No. Got a bout of that insomnia for the last year and a half.
So listen, did you see the Caleb Porter news?
I did see the Caleb Porter news.
How about that?
Yeah. I didn't know that this was a, now I'm not, my ear is not to the ground.
Here comes Suk's hot timber takes.
Of the soccer world. Although, you know, I went to my first, it's not a regular season game. I've never been to a regular season Timbers game.
But you've been to you go to the games that matter.
I've been to a preseason game, and I've been to a postseason game. So clearly, that is why you call me I am expert. I didn't know, but yeah, I guess there some tension there between coach and front office. Porter, I guess, is...
Is that what it is?
I guess Porter is notoriously bristly to deal with. Let's go to Soccer Mike.
I interviewed Porter once. Oh, are you waiting for a comment?
Well, I was waiting for Soccer Mike, but then you dropped
it. Yeah, you started in. So
yeah, I interviewed him for TV once, and I found him boring.
Well, I guess the listening to people, he
can be a little...
Yeah, he can be a bit... He can be a bit bristly.
He's kind of a douche.
Well, it sounds like what happened here. He resigned.
He left.
They mutually parted ways, but
he left.
He went to him and was like, I don't want to do this anymore.
So, Soccer Mike, what do you got?
Well, it's surprising because he... Thank you. He led them to getting their MLS Cup a couple of years ago and led them to the top seed in the Western Conference this year. But like what you guys said, everything I've heard is he's just not exactly the best person to be around. So maybe he wore on management or vice versa, or he wore on the players.
Well, this isn't new. I mean, look at Jimmy Johnson was building a dynasty in Dallas and he couldn't get along with Jerry Jones.
Yeah, and I mean, this year ended because of injuries mostly, and they had like half their team was hurt for that playoff game. But
the number one seed.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's interesting. I wonder if maybe there's the U.S. men's national team job poking around Caleb Porter, and that's why he stepped down.
You think he would get that job?
I think he could. He's been successful everywhere he's been, so I wouldn't be surprised if they gave it to him. But and it's not really a bad thing in my mind because the Timbers have a really good team. They get a new manager who knows anything at all about MLS soccer, then I think they can still be very successful. And then if he goes on to be the coach of U.S. men's national team, awesome. I think they'll be pretty good with him.
Mike is right. They should hire a coach who knows something about soccer. I think that would be wise.
No. About the MLS.
Oh.
Oh, I was going to say, maybe me. I mean, I could throw my... Between that and the Portland State job that's probably going to open up, I figure I should get one of those, right?
The MLS is very weird compared to the rest of soccer. So, right. With the rules and the contracts and the designated players and stuff. So.
And the pudding.
I would play everyone up front.
That
would
me too. Yeah.
I would go all out.
Dude, score.
Yeah.
Blitz.
Yeah, we're not going to worry about
defense.
We would
play a blitz offense.
Yes, well, the whole offsides thing's right. It moves with your back defenders. I'm playing all my defenders up.
How many guys are on the field for a team at once?
11.
10 of them are going.
There's only one goalie. I have 11 guys. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, let's do it. Everyone goes. How are you going to stop this offense? I'm revolutionizing the game.
So I'm hearing that Caleb Porter is probably going to be the Oregon State coach. Did you hear that?
I did not.
Football.
Oh, really?
Do they have
Are they confused about football? The whole football thing?
Maybe that's
what's right. They did that bit when NBC got the Euro League or the Premier League. Who was it? The Jason Sudeikis did
Sudeikis,
that.
Sudeikis, yeah.
Yeah, I remember he did that. Where was the American football coach going over to England to coach? We need to do the reverse of that and get Caleb Porter out there coaching some Oregon State Beavers.
So what makes a good soccer coach? This is my last question.
I'm soccer Mike?
Mike here.
Partially. Tactics, right? Picking the right formation, tactically being able to change during games and see what's happening. But a lot of it's just managing the personalities. Soccer players have egos the size of any other athlete. They want to play. If they're not playing well and you bench them, then you got to manage that. So it's the same as any other kind of coaching job. It's a mix of player, what's the word? Like player relationships and being tactically a good coach. So
do you think the Timbers will hire Larry Brown?
What is Larry? Will Larry Brown immediately lead them?
Well,
he'll lead them to a title, but then they'll be suspended from playoffs for like 3 straight years.
He's taken every other job known to man.
Yeah, why not? Where is Larry Brown?
I don't know. He's probably playing golf, drinking brown water.
He's got to be a little old now, right? He's got to be in his seventies, right?
It's just a number.
Old Lair.
Hot 5 at 5 is next. College football after that on the Fan.
Okay. Picture this, it's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road, any road, the steeper the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.